since that went on for over an hour, we'll take a couple of minutes to review what made news in that news conference. And joining me is Washington Post opinion writer and host of the Post podcast, Cape Up, Jonathan Capehart, who's going to do a unique kind of double duty here. He's going to help analyze the Trump news conference, and then he will be the guest host of the Leonard Lopate Show right after that. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
So they made news in a number of ways. I guess that it's newsworthy that the first comment was really by the press secretary, Sean Spicer, about the documents revealed yesterday by CNN and BuzzFeed on unverified claims about scandalous information Russia might have collected about Trump. Unverified, Spicer asserted that it's all false and reminded everybody that it's unsubstantiated, and said it can be attributed to media bias and an attempt by the media to delegitimize the president-elect. The press secretary made that accusation.
Yeah, he made that accusation. But look, the president-elect finds himself sort of prone and open to these questions about his dealings with Russia, given what he has said in this press conference, at his campaign rallies, what he said at his last press conference in July. Hey, Russia, I invite you to hack Hillary Clinton to find out more stuff, praising Russian President Vladimir Putin and doing so while also saying that our sitting president, President Obama, is not a real leader. And on top of all of that, and I think the key thing to keep in mind and to remember, and he addressed this in the press conference, is Donald Trump, President-elect Trump, has not released his tax returns. Now, there is no law that says that he must, but the tradition has been that people seeking the office of the presidency release their tax returns so that the American people can see and know what their entanglements could be and where there could be conflicts of interest. But as President-elect Trump said in response to the question about releasing the tax returns, he said, nobody cares. The only people who care are you guys, meaning the press. I won. But he said, I won, meaning the American people knew he hadn't released his tax returns, said he wouldn't release them because he was under audit by the IRS, even though it has been widely reported that if Donald Trump wanted to release his tax returns, there is no prohibition by the IRS. But his contention then and continues to be that he doesn't need to do it because the American people don't care.
Well, what do you think about that? Why is that not proof that the American people don't care enough? And so he's politically insulated from revealing whatever it is that he doesn't want to reveal about his tax returns.
Well, you know, that is a very good question because, you know, he's in that regard, he is correct. He didn't release his tax returns. A big deal was made of it. The American people still opted that they were so angry and so enraged by what was happening in Washington and Washington being out of touch that they decided to roll the dice and go with him. And now, as a result, we are looking at any number of potential conflicts that we have yet to even know might exist.
Now, related to that, he introduced during the news conference a conflicts of interest lawyer, Sherry Dillon from the firm Morgan, Lewis & Bockius, to describe some steps being taken to give the public confidence that he will not stand to benefit financially from being president. And I guess the biggest headline here is that the Trump Organization, comprising hundreds of entities, will be conveyed to a trust by Inauguration Day, but he won't sell or divest himself of the business.
Correct. And even though he will not be in the leadership of the business, it's being handed over to his sons and one other person. And so I think they even said flat out, you know, no, this isn't a blind trust. And I think once the real like tax experts and ethics experts dive into it, that he's probably doing the bare minimum he has to in order to clear ethics hurdles. But I also think in terms of the everyday person looking at what's going on, it very well might be enough for them to give him a pass.
Ms. Dillon, the bankruptcy – or the – I'm sorry, the tax – the conflict of interest lawyer said there's no way to put Donald Trump's holdings in a blind trust, really, because, for example, he can't unknow that he owns Trump Tower.
Right. You know, actually, that's an interesting point, and that is a good point. It's not like when President George W. Bush came into office and he had to get rid of the baseball team and you throw all your stuff into a blind trust. He doesn't own a giant company. He didn't own a giant interest. And so in that regard, I think it was possible to put it all in a blind trust. He doesn't know what's going on. But as we all know, Donald Trump is very aware and keeps tabs on Donald Trump. So he will always know what's happening to anything that his name is attached to.
And one other important piece of her presentation, the lawyer's presentation, that we should mention, because it's gotten raised by Democratic members of Congress already on this show, and I'm sure many, many other places, the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, which prohibits and help me get it right, and financial transactions between any federal employee, which would include the president, and foreign governments.
Foreign
entities. And she said it was never meant to apply to normal business transactions like a foreign person paying their hotel room bill in Trump hotels. She said that's not a gift. I guess the Emoluments Clause is about gifts from foreign entities. So it's not an emolument. And yet, to go an extra mile, they will donate to the U.S. Treasury any profits from foreign entities paying money for Trump hotel rooms. So hotel room bills, if they're seen as profits, are going to become, in effect, like tax dollars.
Okay. It was a very interesting sort of rhetorical gymnastics exercise that we listened to when she talked about this. I think the Emoluments Clause is going to now be open to wide interpretation. One, no one even knew that that was there except for Constitution and tax geeks,
right,
that the Emoluments Clause was there. So now we're going to have, I think, an open debate among the American people about what this means and does what he proposed meet that challenge. Mm. It's an interesting question whether a hotel bill qualifies as an emolument. But where I have an issue is profits from hotel bills from foreign entities. So how are you defining foreign entities of foreign governments, and how are you sussing all that out? And is it like Hollywood accounting when it comes to hotel profits? There are no profits in Hollywood. Are there profits in hotels? I'm not sure.
Let me just touch on a couple of other things real quick that I think were newsworthy. This one is important. He reaffirmed that any Obamacare repeal bill will be repeal and replace. He said it will be essentially simultaneously, hopefully same day. And I think that's important to the 20 million people who have insurance through Obamacare, directly or indirectly, to know that they're not just going to be hung out to dry while the Republicans in Congress start a new debate.
That is true, but it would have been helpful had the president-elect given at least a skeletal outline of what that replacement would look like. If he had done that, I think the American people would have a little bit more confidence. But as we've seen over the last few years, the Republican Party talked about repeal, replace. Then it just became repeal with no mention of replace. There are bills out there, but they haven't gotten a whole lot of attention of late. And so I'm still having a hard time seeing how you are going to repeal the Affordable Care Act and simultaneously replace it without going through what should be months, if not at least a year's worth of public debate over what it should look like.
We'll see how they handle that. He affirmed the recent statement that a wall will begin to be built with U.S. money. But he asserted again that eventually Mexico will reimburse one way or another. Maybe that'll be a tax on Mexican imports or some other means. He said he would make an announcement probably in his first 2 weeks on a Supreme Court nominee to succeed the late Justice Scalia. And the last thing I want to get your take on, he appeared to refuse to take a question, I guess, from a CNN reporter.
We were
both trying to see who
CNN.
It was, calling them fake news. And I guess that's probably because CNN reported the story yesterday on the intelligence agency documents on unverified claims about scandalous information Russia might have collected about Trump. You know, something like that. Here, your former New Yorker, former Daily News employee, recently Mayor de Blasio refused to take a question at a news conference from anyone from the New York Post because of something that was reported. Now Donald Trump seems to be singling out a news agency for refusing to take a question, a prominent, obviously prominent news organization, because he didn't like one of their stories. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that sets a new precedent at the national level.
Well, at the national level, yes. At the New York City level, come on, that's par for the course. Mayor Giuliani used to do that all the time. If your paper ran a story he did not like, your phone calls would not be returned. You wouldn't get questions answered at the press at a press availability that was televised. All sorts of things happening behind the scenes. But what we haven't seen at the national level is a president-elect or even a president of the United States willfully saying to a member of the press, I am not going to talk to you. I am not going to take a question from you. And that's when you start messing with the American people's right to know. And so while people talk smack about the Washington Press Corps a lot, and a lot of the criticism of the Washington Press Corps is deserved, but if you smack them around too hard, we will see just how much they will flex their muscle. And there's a lot of muscle to flex that they haven't flexed in a long time.
Jonathan Capehart, Washington Post opinion writer and host of the podcast from the Washington Post, Cape Up, with Jonathan Capehart.